Economic Development Committee meeting for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. We're in our new facility in the East Conference Room 337, Prairie Point Drive, Yorkville. We have Alderman Funkhauser, Alderman Blatcher, Alderman Cornell, Alderman Koch, and staff present. I guess we'll go on to citizen comments. Is anybody in Zoom?
Nobody in Zoom.
Okay. Any comments? Okay, none. Minutes for corrections slash approval, March 7th, 2023. Good job.
Yeah.
If so, we'll take that as approved. Okay, on new business. Item one, EDC 2023-18, building permit reports for February and March of 2023.
So in February, we added 12 single-family detached homes, 18 single-family attached. Vast majority of those were in Grand Reserve for the attached homes, and then for Raintree Village for the single-family detached. They're making a big push to finish that out there. They actually finished all the development for that section of Wendat Ridge. They're going to finish that out, so that should all be done. We're putting a lot of effort into keeping mud off the roads out there. So you know, that's been an issue. We're every day, we have two times a day, have someone out there, no matter what. And then for March, we did 44 single-family detached homes and 16 attached in pretty much in the same areas. We did add some more into the Grand Reserve for single-family detached homes. So we're moving pretty good. I'm on track with last year this year. So.
Questions? Okay, move on to item two, EDC 23-19, building inspection reports for February and March 2023.
Right. In February, we did a total of 551 inspections. Still a little slow, a little colder then. We're continuing to outsource any of our overflow. Whenever we have to, we're trying to keep that to a minimum, but things are just getting busier and busier, so it seems like we're keep having to use it. In March, we end up doing 994 inspections, and same deal, most of those were single family attached and detached homes.
Any questions? Okay, move on to item three, EDC 2023-20, property maintenance reports for February and March 2023.
You'll see the packet, we had a lot of cases, but not a lot of them actually came to hearing. Most of them were corrected beforehand. The standout one for both months would probably be 1602 North Bridge. They were held liable for $3,550. That's the storage area over there. What happened is they went to hearing. The property owner was given a chance to correct it, to move the units out of there. And the hearing officer said, well, he'll waive the fine if they're out of it within 30 days, or 60 days. So within the 60 days came and went, and the hearing came up, no one showed up, and they were still there, so they imposed this fine for them. So we've actually adjudicated it again.
This is next to Duncan?
Yes. Yeah, this is that issue. So we've actually adjudicated it again since then and had a similar finding liability on them. They just keep, we're in constant communication. I think we've had three or four conversations with them on the phone, and Chris has spoken with them as well, and they just keep trying to find someone to buy it to remove them instead of just removing them. And we keep telling them just, they have to remove them. We don't really want to buy them. We just want them out of there because they're not allowed to be there. So they're still there. We're working with our process to try to get them moved as soon as possible.
I would anticipate we'll have an update on that property here for the next city council meeting, potentially.
For the next council meeting?
Yep.
Do we know, are those units in use? Are they, is that part of the issue that they have people renting them?
From what I've heard, they've told us they're vacant and empty. I've also heard anecdotally from some residents that had stuff there that were told to move them right away. That didn't have anywhere to move stuff, so I made a couple calls and found some spots where it had open storage. So they moved their stuff out of there. So from what I'm told, they are empty. They just don't want to do the disassembly process, load them on a truck, haul them out. They just want to.
They want to get
sell
somebody
them.
Else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Any update. Okay, we'll look for an update then. Item 4, EDC 2023-21 Economic Development Reports for March and April 2023.
Okay. So you have March in there and then also April. The big news in April is Little Loaf Bakehouse. This is something Yorkville has wanted for a very long time. And one of our own residents, graduate of Yorkville High School, Bailey Knapp, is moving back to Yorkville and going to be opening a bakery that will be eventually serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, small bites. She's professionally trained as a bake chef and comes with a lot of experience both in restaurants and bakery coffee shop. And this has been her dream to come back home to Yorkville and do this. This is the little house that is at the corner of Center and 47 across from the Town Square Park. So it's a very nice setting for something like this. And from what I understand, her what she makes is fabulous, and she wants to be very involved with the community, work with the young adults at the high school, show art from the area, to showcase other people with talent, and give back to the town that she was brought up in. So it's very exciting. So you'll see much more about this, and I think she's going to do a fabulous job. So that's the information about that. And then obviously the restaurant that was located in the building where Panera and Starbucks is, it was a faux PHO. Now it is Sea Shack Cajun style. Same people own it, but they changed the operator, how they are operating, you know, the theme. And they have two of them, and they did the same with both. So, and J&E Restorations is, again, two Yorkville residents that have got together. They've been in this business since 21, and now they're growing, and they opened an office right there on 47 in the same building that Bella Tressa is located in. So, updates, I think the most obvious thing is that Scooter's Coffee, that the bank is now down. So now it's time to go up. If anyone has any other questions?
No questions, but on Little Loaf, that's the little brown house.
It's white.
Or is it white?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not the one I'm thinking. It's north.
Yeah.
Of where I'm thinking it's south across from Clark Park.
It's on the west side of...
That's Main Street, I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. It's on the west side of 47. It was a dentist's office at one time.
Okay, it was the dentist.
Yeah. Sure. Is the parking lot in the back?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn. Item number five, EDC 2023-22 Bristol Ridge Solar 105, an amendment, rezone, special use, and variance.
Yeah, so real briefly, Turning Point Energy is looking to build a solar farm on this site. It's a 54-acre site on the northeast part of town off of Cannonball Road, just north of the BNSF railway. They're looking to utilize 26 of those acres for a solar farm. So what they're requesting is a special use, as a solar farm is required as a special use. In our code, a rezone from the R2 and R2D to ag. They are requesting a variance from our zoning code for the overall height of the solar panels. Within our code, we say they have to be 10 feet off the ground, which is not an industry standard and is fairly dangerous. So they're looking for a variance to bring that down to 2 feet. And then finally, this was part of the Bristol Ridge subdivision, which was a subdivision from 2006 that never materialized. So they are looking to remove that land plan so they would be allowed to do this solar farm. I believe Bart has the main layout there. Just in general review, Turning Point has provided all the documents required. It's been reviewed by staff that it's going to be completely fenced in. There will be landscaping anywhere that faces Cannonball or Bristol, and also to the residential property to the north, there'll be additional landscaping. So this is set to go to the May 30th City Council for the Annexation Amendment public hearing. It's going next week for PZC public hearing for the rezone special use variance, and then it should all come together in June City Council. So obviously the next one is the same petitioner, but let's if you have any questions on this one, I'll go over the next one later. Scott from Turning Points here also, if you have any questions for him.
I'm sorry?
Would you like to?
No, my name is Scott Osborne. I'm the developer for Turning Point on this, on these two projects here off of Cannonball Trail. And I think Jason really just covered the technical details of what we're proposing. On the 17th of this month, of last month, I sent out, I think, 53 mailers to all of the neighbors within 500 feet of the property line, and we're receiving back the return receipt cards. They went certified mail. I did get one back that was not deliverable for some reason. I'm going to try to chase that down tomorrow. But we've notified neighbors. I've met with the landowner in this location. The parcel on the northwest corner there is Mr. Robert Velasquez. He owns Simplify Landscaping, and I've met with him a couple of times, and he's a little hesitant, but he's not outright opposed to the project. We're doing what we can to help alleviate his concerns through landscape buffering and fencing, and so this is not going to feel like it's an intrusion on his property. The parcels there, the Bristol Tap, I think everyone here probably knows where Bristol Tap is. They're right there. Thank you, Bart. I met with Mike, who is now the owner. Mike Sutton. Yes,
Sutton.
Met with Mike last week, and Sean, who owns a refrigeration company just north of there, met with both of them last week. They didn't express significant concerns with this use behind the property. We will be set back from the rear of the parking lot there about 600 feet, so it's not right in their backyard either. There is a bit of we will do a detailed drain tile survey here to see if we have drain tiles. Well, we know drain tiles are on the property, but that wet area that Bart's circling with the cursor there has kind of shown up in the last 20 plus years. It seems like maybe there's an interference with the mutual drainage on the drain tile work, possibly from the ComEd substation, possibly from the more industrial uses farther to the south. But we're gonna try to figure that out, and hopefully, if that's a drainage issue, hopefully we can work to solve it. I think that covers what I know off the top of my head. We have interconnection agreement pending with ComEd. So we've done all the studies there. They've confirmed that they can accept power. And there is a, it's interesting to me, it may not be interesting to anyone else, but there is a couple of manholes right here in this corner. And that's where we will tie in to the ComEd system. And they have indicated that's the preferred location for them. So that task is moving forward, and I think we'll have a signed interconnection agreement with ComEd in the next, I think, 45 or 60 days. So that's another big task on our plate. But that is this site and our proposed use. So any questions?
Should we go first, Chris?
Would anybody be opposed if we go through staff report on this one? And then, since they're
sure.
So similar,
yeah, let's
kind of get the high level and then discuss it.
Yeah, sounds good.
You want to do the next one as well?
Yeah.
And then we can talk about it. That way we're not answering.
Because they're similar.
Yeah, sure. Turning Point Energy has requested to build a solar farm. This is also part of Bristol Ridge. This is the northern parcel. It's a 42-acre property. They're proposing 28 acres of it to the solar farm. Again, it's the exact same. They're looking for a rezone, special use variance. Special use for the solar farm, rezone to bring it to A1, and then a variance for the clearance underneath to be brought down to 2 feet. And then again, they are asking for an annexation agreement from the Bristol Ridge Development to be removed. So this one is very similar. It again will be fenced in completely. They're providing landscaping efforts all along Cannonball Trail. And they are, we're bringing them along again on this exact same path. So PZC is next week for the public hearing, and then end of May, City Council for the public hearing for the annexation agreement, and then we're bringing it together in June. Anything else?
This is kind of the same spiel. We tried to give a good south setback in the southwest corner there from Mr. Velasquez's home. And we also did a setback of an extra 50 feet from the church. And we put that bar right there where Bart's cursor is going. That is a vegetative buffer to help screen the visibility from the church's use.
You might want to explain out there, explain the setback to the house.
Yeah, yes, okay. So we did do a couple of setbacks here from the home. So this is the very back corner of the Velasquez home is here, and so this is 591 feet up to the corner of the panels. And over here we have 590 feet from the home. So we did our best to really move away, so we didn't want to be right on top of those folks. That's not right. From the road we have a 100-foot setback from the right-of-way is the minimum, and down here it's obviously a good deal deeper. Access coming in off of Cannonball Trail, and I've spoken with a gentleman named Fran at the county who says that I will do a permit with them to make sure that we have proper access off the road. The church has a little well that's right here, and we wanted to make sure we gave proper setback to that well just so that our groundwork didn't interfere with their water supply.
Hey, Scott, you want to show them where the landscaping is in the southwest and then where the panels are? Because it's kind of hard to see that dotted line.
Yes, so we have a drawn in a buffer here. So we have our access path coming off of Cannonball, and we've drawn in this vegetative screening buffer that zigzags set back from the panels and should provide adequate screening to really reduce visibility from the road. Also have another one right here and up here helping to screen from the church. Our interconnection is back to ComEd. I believe, yeah, the power line here is on the west side of the road, so we'll have to cross the road. But we will have six above ground poles coming back to our inverter system, which is what converts the electricity from DC to AC current. Such that the utility company can accept it. There's nothing else that stands out to me, but if there are questions, I'm happy to at least try to answer.
Just one quick question. So why do you have to cross the road? Why can't the power is on this side of the road already, right? You come in.
The ComEd power lines are on the west side of the road there.
Okay.
So we'll have to cross the road with the overhead line. This is what they've specified. So what we say to them is we would really love to interconnect our facility to you in this location. And then their engineers come back and they say, this is where you're going to do it. So that's really out of our control.
Chris, you want to start?
You want me to start?
Sure.
So
first, I take it that the information that we have in our packet is most up to date, because I noticed that the Kennecott Soil Conservation District, they have a different set of plans. So it must have been an earlier version that was submitted to them. Because what you're showing in the southwest corner with the setbacks doesn't appear on the plan that was submitted to Kendall County. So this is part of the Soil Water Conservation District. I assume it's just was early and this is more.
Yes, this is the
this based on
yes, this is the revised and updated layout. Yes.
I would assume that it's not going to change their view on things because it was a favorable review for that. Pushing it back away from the residences, I don't see that being a negative. But I just want to make sure that what we have is just current and this is just a prior submission.
They will also receive a copy during permit.
They'll get an updated version. Okay.
During permit.
The site has fencing around it. The nomenclature in the report and on the paper is agricultural style. Somebody explain to me what agricultural style is.
We intended that for that to be wire mesh fence, so that would be a 4 to 5 inch square grid. For some reason, and I had not heard it used in that term either. I'm somewhat new to TPE, so I'm learning as well. This can be chain link. If we need it to be a privacy fence, a wood privacy fence along Cannonball Trail, we can do that. We are open. The National Electric Code does require fencing. I think the code says it's somewhere at 6 to 8 feet. Our application, I believe, says 8 feet for the fencing. We do have to fence it under the National Electric Code. And whatever we can do to make that less intrusive or help with the screening, we're willing to do that.
Because I know the sides and rear are something that have been less of a concern for others that have come through. It's more the frontage. We've asked for slats put into them on some of them. But those have been chain link fences as compared to the solid wood fence that was by the courthouse. That's just my concern, is making sure that it works well, and we're actually, the fencing is going to hold up. If it's an 8 foot agricultural style fence like that, I'm not sure that it's going to be as durable as a chain link fence. 4x4, 6x4.
So we, at Plan Council, we talked about that at a staff level about how they might want to do chain link as opposed to agricultural, because that might not be as secure. Also that along Cannonball, they might need to provide some sort of more privacy fence.
Those are our recommendations.
Those are, since they're in ag, if it's rezoned to ag, they're allowed to have chain link fence, which would reduce the cost. Kendall County was in an office district. They had to have a private, they couldn't use chain link.
And we had residential over there as well.
Correct.
So that makes sense with fencing security. I do notice that there's full landscaping across the frontage on the south parcel, but the north parcel here, there's actually a gap in the northeast corner.
I'm trying to recall if we had a reason for it in the northeast, so.
I'm sorry, northwest.
Yeah, northwest, right, Mark. I think we're talking about this gap here.
Yes, why is there a gap there compared to everything else having complete landscape?
I can't think of a reason for there to be a gap there, except for maybe the possibility of not placing the buffer in the 100-foot setback from the road right away. That's the only thing I'm looking at it with the same question. Why did we do that? And I can't think of a reason not to have it.
Yeah, I would preferably like to see a continuous line of landscaping across there instead of a break. That's concerning if you have to cut a few panels and push it back a little bit. That would be ideal. I looked at the landscape plan, it looks like there's a little more flow than just this rigid, so I don't want it to be extremely rigid. You're doing a pollinator landscape under everything, except for the front and then where the access trucks would be, correct? So that's going to be natural planted?
Yes.
Okay, so that'll alleviate my concerns about concentrated rainfall onto the panels and runoff issues. Stormwater's been my concern that it's not required on these, so.
Yeah, if I'm Kyle Berry, I'm the attorney for the project. Two quick things about that. First, I believe the landscaping plan or the seed mix will be consistent with state statute. There's a pollinator mix statute that provides recommendations. So I think that the project will attempt to conform with the recommendation from the statute. The Department of Natural Resources is supposed to be coming out with some additional guidelines. I don't think they've done that yet. But again, I think that will help inform the pollinator mix as well. And then the stormwater, we'll probably talk more about this next week, but there is I believe it's the American Society of Professional Engineers has done a stormwater report and they've concluded that if it's done right, if you do plant the native grasses correctly, the stormwater situation should improve after the panels are put in versus, you know, a plowed field that sits vacant most for half the year. So.
My concern is more when it's in the establishment time. Mm-hmm. Until that grass is established, you have a concentrated runoff because you're taking a panel that's, I don't know if these are 8x8s or what the exact size is, but you're concentrating it all on one edge. And until it's actually established, you have a point flow discharge all the way across these lines of panels. That's my concern. So it's an establishment issue. So hopefully during our, I don't know if we have 1 year, 2 year on this one, but it would be, since this is natural prairie, 2 years would be my preference to make certain that they're in compliance and that it's fully established. Typically, a development is 1 year for us to make sure that they've complied with all their development obligations and the growth is established.
Or public improvements.
Yeah, and so on. Something like this, it takes longer to establish natural prairie. So that would be my concern, is making sure it's done correctly and we don't have an issue over the long term.
Yeah, Scott, you might want to address just so everybody's clear, the panels aren't, they move.
Yes, so, these are trade.
Understand the concern about how there's the flow off the panels, but it depends on what part of the day it rains.
In which direction?
At night, they're straight up and down, right? Or
not purely straight up. Okay. They should be at about 60 degrees, I think, at night.
So my only point is that they're not going to the flow isn't going to necessarily be the same every time.
Right. Yeah. It's, unless you come across our rain right now that we've had in the past week.
Yeah.
That'll make sense. Landscaping, the ground cover. What are you guys going to do? Your plans don't delineate what's happening in the southwest corner, the west edge, the buffers. And then same thing, the other site, the 600 feet on the west side. What's happening with that land?
I would prefer to see it still continue to be farmed because I think that's probably the best use rather than letting it sit.
Are you contract purchasing?
This will be a long-term lease agreement with the landowner.
And the landowner, have they expressed willingness to farm such a small piece?
They're leasing it out to somebody else, and I have not been put in contact with that farmer at this point. I've been asking for that information.
Those end up being very small tracts of land for farming.
Right.
So that's a concern for me, is what's going to happen to that.
And if you're a big-time farmer, you're not going to want to mess around with little pieces.
Yeah.
Right. That is
so that may be something, there may be a long-term planting plan that needs to happen on those.
I've been trying to get that sorted out. The landowner made sure that he maintained access to this parcel here in the middle and for farming. So if they're going to come in for this, I can't remember what this is, but I want to say it's about 8 acres, 8 to 10 acres right here.
Because the two parcels you're looking at and the parcel in the center, they're all owned by the same company?
Yes.
Same owner?
Yes.
I'm going to ask already, why are they all three not connected? Is there a logic?
There are different reasons for it. The middle parcel just wasn't large enough under the Power Authority program. If parcels are directly Power Authority program for community solar, if the parcels are directly abutting
under their program, they count it as one solar project. So having them separated helps us call these two projects when we go to the Illinois Power Authority looking for their support.
And just to clear, there are size limits for a community solar project. It can only be so big, 5 megawatts, which translates to typically a certain number of acres. So
this gets down to the economics and the financial aspect of what falls into the program?
I would say it's more about the regulatory part of the program, but ultimately, yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know if financial is the right way to look at it, but it's what's allowed under the community scale solar program.
What were the lease terms, the length?
With Mr. White, I believe it is, off the top of my head, I don't know the exact terms, I believe it is 25 years plus 2 5-year extensions. Optional extensions by the on the back end.
And does this follow the same decommissioning scale and rate that we have on the prior?
We have not gotten an estimate back for.
Well, I ran the numbers on decommissioning today, and they came out to be $357,000 for the southern project and $356,000 for this. So I think if we were to put in a decommissioning bond of $360,000 per site, that would be would meet the requirements.
Staff would still require the 3% escalator as we did for the other project.
For inflation and going forward, yeah, I would want something like that, not what it is today.
Yeah, so we would provide those numbers, your estimate to our engineer. He would add 120% for that to get what it is that we need for bonding for that.
Okay. That falls into what I've seen elsewhere, and it's pretty consistent, so I can't imagine any objections from my bosses.
I may have more comments.
Joe?
I'm doing fine right now.
All right, I have a couple things. So this is a little different than the previous ones we did, because those were private, and they weren't already annexed in. This one here is already annexed in, right?
Yes.
So, when's this agreement? What's the life of the annexation agreement, original one? 2026?
It'll expire in 2026.
Okay. So, basically, the odds are that no houses are, it's not going to get developed then, is what you're saying.
That would be most likely. There's not a lot of utilities out there, and it's not a place we've seen a lot of people look for growth.
So, that was one of the things I was wondering, because if you were to say, okay, we're not going to allow homes on it anymore, which when you change the zoning, that would go away because it's going to be ag. That means if it was a younger subdivision, I'd have a real problem, because you're banking, you're trying to weigh future homes maybe developing, coming in there, and a revenue generator for the city than something that isn't. Because this is toward the end of its life, that agreement maybe is not as important, but I think other ones could come up down the road. That's the other thing, are we setting precedent? Am I going to have to worry about this developer and that developer if home sales start slowing up? They're going to want to come in, put panels on their, what's remaining open on their property, and then, you know, until the economy changes, and then they might come back and say, okay, now I want to remove them, and whatever the cost would be for that. That's a concern I do have. Once we change the zone, before we don't have zoning, it's a different story, but with it already zoned residential and stuff and our plans for it, that's a concern I have, you know that. And so I think you explained the 28, I was wondering the difference in the acreage. So your acreage that you're gonna have panels on is to meet that other thing that you talked about with the regulatory, right?
Yes.
Because you're not using the whole 47 acres.
Right, we're not using I think it's 26 and 28 acres.
Okay.
Sites. Yeah, so it's very close. In some cases, you can pack them in tighter. This is a broader, flatter parcel, so they can be lined up, you know, in a more desirable fashion for the engineering side. On the southern parcel, they got to be packed in a little tighter just to help us with the setbacks on the west side and
Well, then there's that ponding issue.
And there's that pond down there that we would like to, we're not sure it's a pond, ponding, as Kyle said. So if we can solve that, maybe we can push the array a little bit farther to the east and even farther from the homes and the tap and the refrigeration company there.
And the other item, so you're putting trees around the whole, if I remember the packet right, you're planting trees all the way around it?
The vegetative buffer that we're talking about here is going to be on the western edge, parallel to Cannonball.
Just that one stretch?
Yes. And up here on the north to help screen the church. There's a row of existing trees there in the parcel to the north behind the church on the...
Are you in the packet part?
Right along here.
No.
So there are existing trees there that help reduce visibility from, is that Galena Road up there? I think it is.
I'd like to see it, this, if I can have any proceso in it, I'd like to see it. Especially, we might have homes that come in later on down the road near this. And the trees will take 5, 6, 7 years if a pine's in to get high enough that to not to shell, you know, just hide it anyhow. Corn, actually. I'm experienced with that you can plant 16 rows of corn and you will never see this.
Yeah.
For a few months.
Oh, I've been out in the middle of a field like that, and the only ones that seen us were the DOE or the guys coming in with airplanes. Because they wonder why we're out in the middle of a field with a big open spot. So that's why I was asking about trees, if it's all the way around it, or if it's just, is it going to be a berm?
We haven't planned for a berm.
You guys will be doing very minimal earthwork out here, correct? Because you're just doing pylons for each of the arrays?
The engineers use what they call helical anchors, which is an auger. Okay. It's an auger. Yeah.
So you're not doing earthwork out here to generate enough or any soil for a berm, probably?
Yeah. Berms are typically disfavored because of the stormwater issues that you raised earlier.
Has staff reviewed the landscape plan?
Hay and Associates has reviewed the landscape plan.
So they're evergreens, which are not ornamental trees, but they're more large shrubs. Mm-hmm. Is the intent for those to be evergreen trees or just more shrubs that should reach 6 to 8 feet in maturity? I'm looking at the list.
My understanding is it's the tree. So Hay and Associates, they're going back and forth. So Kinley Horn is their engineering firm, and they're going back and forth because we do have perimeter landscaping standards that we said. At Plan Council, you know, it would be great if you just met those standards. So they're going back and forth on the species. Okay. I believe the species were all permitted.
Well, permitted, but it's a matter of intent.
Right.
Do you want evergreen trees that reach 30 feet, or do you want 6 to 8 foot ornamental evergreen large shrubs? And I'm looking at the list right now, and a few of them will reach the height of what you would consider an evergreen tree.
Okay.
You're saying you prefer them to be the taller evergreen trees.
Well, and I guess it gets into an issue of
sunlight.
Does it affect it with your setback from the landscape buffer? Does that affect how close you have the array? But you're also putting canopy trees in there too, so
I was gonna say the canopy.
If you're already putting canopy trees, why not the evergreens, actual evergreen trees?
Right, if they are 30-foot trees, I think that we would probably want to push the buffer a bit to the west to help not have the panels be shaded by those trees.
But everything, looking at the, you know, there's not shade trees, they're ornamentals. You've got your magnolias, you've got hawthorns, different things like that. There are not oaks, maples. So it's not a full-size landscape buffer like we would think. It's a smaller, lower profile, which I'm trying to think of the road profile, how the road profile is with the field here.
Bart, if you hit like next, some of the viewpoints. So there's an aerial, and then, so this was the view. This is the view they thought, and this would be in a year 5. So when they're getting more full grown. And then I think next is from Cannonball Trail.
access.
So it'll fill in. It's not going to be as tall as like your residential buffer, but it'll fill in.
And to get a 20-foot pine, it'll take you 25 years anyhow to get 30 feet.
Right.
So as long as these are fast enough growing.
You actually could buy, 8 footers or something, right? Start out.
40
feet. No, but I'm saying probably reasonably you could do 8 footers even or something if you wanted to.
So you could do with
speed up that process.
But some of these species are not going to get that big. But if we're good with the landscape buffer, that's getting 8 to 10 feet as compared to a 20-30 foot tall buffer. Mm-hmm. It works.
And the array itself is only 15 feet.
And is that at the max?
Is that the max
tilt?
Okay. Yes.
Which is why an 8-10 foot tree probably is
sufficient for this.
Yeah, it would work, but then I noticed that go back one drawing part. Go forward. Yeah. So why would you do that if you're trying to cover, cover it up, shade it, hide it?
So this okay?
Because you can bump the trees in between there.
This is in the north.
This is a
this is from the south project. Right.
This is right out the back door of Mr. Velasquez's home.
To the north.
And this is looking to the north.
Okay.
And the pine trees that are here in the kind of the mid ground, these are
there.
These are where he's planted those. Those are on his property. What we're trying to show is
the ones in the background. The ones,
mm-hmm.
The ones by the tank here are his.
Yes.
Okay.
From that depth and that range, they're showing you what it's going to look like.
So that shows three of the six above ground power poles, and the plantings that are kind of in that background of this image are what we intended for the landscape buffer to how we intended it for it to appear in year 5.
One of the questions I have, Chris, anything else?
No, this one, the fact that the annexation agreement is going to expire very quickly, anything that happens beyond that would have to be renegotiated. So the one thing that I don't really care for is this is a prime. When you look at the soils and the farm quality, this is actually a prime piece. Takes it out of use for 25 years. You know, whether it's development or it's farming, it's actually a really good development because there's the north piece has very minimal hydric soils. It's really good soil. The other one is, about 50-50. So, but it is the landowner's wish to do something with it. So I don't want to get in the middle of that. I just hope that our maintenance standards keep this up and this thing doesn't create any problems. That's my concern. Long term is my concern.
So, another question I had regarding the logistics of this. So, if we did this, agree to these changes and the change of the zoning and stuff, and then 2026 rolls around, because we still have control up to 2026, even if we change the zoning, right? We lose our control?
Right. Once you rezone and approve this as a different special use, the previous entitlements generally go away.
Because they're amending the annexation agreement to allow
So
if somebody wanted to then redo a subdivision, they would just have to come back in front of us to get a re-entitlement.
They have no entitlement for a residential at that point.
Right. I just didn't know if the annexation for the city to have some say on the property going forward is what I was...
Yeah, we can't extend that.
Well, I didn't know how that works. Like,
so if we rezone this as part of this,
okay,
and then amend the annexation agreement, whatever is not related to this solar farm, whether it's a shopping mall or a subdivision or something else, would have to come back in front of you for a land use change because you'd have to rezone it,
right?
And then you'd have to, I don't know if you'd have to repeal the special use per se, but the special use would be on there as long as it's active, so you'd have to have a land use change in order to. So, there's no, hurdle beyond a normal subdivision development coming in front of you for approval.
So how would this be different than someone wanted to de-annex? And just, you know, like, we've had that happen before.
Well, when you de-annex, you have no authority, we have no authority
right.
on the property.
It sounds like here we won't have that either.
No, we'll have
except for their mate to make sure they maintain it like
we will have all of our normal property maintenance standards and everything else that will apply to this. Zoning codes, etc.
After 2026?
Yes. Yeah, once you're in city limits, all of our codes apply to you, whether you have an annexation agreement that's in effect or not. Annexation agreements generally only govern like the initial development of the property. And then once the property is developed, the annexation agreement kind of goes away.
So it gives us our rights for the 20 years, and then after that, if we needed those development agreements,
yeah,
if
so
they're not straight zoning.
Correct. So, like, Grand Reserve was approved in 2003. That annexation technically is expired, but people are still developing in there because that's the deal that was in place when it was annexed. So those things carry forward past the life of the agreement. I mean, there's not an issue there with us losing control because of an expiring annexation.
One other thing for staff, can we get a list of other properties we have like this that could do the same thing?
So
residential annex properties that had a development but were never.
Yeah, what are they about? Is there about 15, 20 of them probably? If you
so
that half of our
there were 35
acres.
Right. There were
most
35
of north of town.
If you think about it this way, any property owner anywhere in the city can ask for this to occur, whether there's a home, a shopping mall, or a farm parcel on it.
No, I'm thinking more like how much of Grand Reserve left then?
Probably about half.
So they could they come in? And
there are parcels that could.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I want to get a feel for.
Well, Grand Reserve, if you recall, has a economic development agreement with the city, and that's till 2041.
Okay.
So they are obligated to do what that development agreement had.
And they can't
come
in and ask
for it at any time, exactly like they're asking.
Yes.
That's where I'm going.
There's no gatekeep on somebody's request that's a landowner or on behalf of a landowner to do a land use change. Yeah. You know, it can go any which way on any property.
Yeah, because if you look at,
because I'm thinking like, okay, Raintree, that's probably there's not enough property left open that they would be interested. Prestwick, no.
Well, they could. They have
they
that
could.
Second unit.
Two.
They have
yeah.
unit 2 that's not platted.
How many acres is that?
I don't know. I have to look it up.
Well, that's what I don't know. I don't know what's that. I mean, because I've never actually. Worried about this before,
but there's no obligation for you guys as city council to have 100% agreement. Just because you do it here doesn't mean you have to do it anywhere else.
Correct.
You know, it's
you might be setting a precedent though.
Well, there's
they're going to say, well, you let these guys.
You go through the zoning, you go through the special use process for each of these sites. So you have some very strict and unique controls on each petition that comes in front of you for a solar farm because of the way that we structured our zoning code.
Yeah. The special use itself is. The whole purpose is it's a one-on-one basis to review a certain project at a certain location.
Yeah, I mean,
whereas in some places they may be appropriate, some places they may not.
Certainly if the next one pops up and it's a terrible idea for whatever reason, you know, and it's legit, you know, when you deny it, can the developer still sue you and say like, well, you approved the last solar farm? Yes, but then you would look at the merits of that. You would say, how is this one different than the other one? And so, you know,
where
we would have to defend that.
Like,
and
like
any
like that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, if we said no to this one, we said the one in Kelogani could. So
yeah,
you could sue whenever.
You're right, but we haven't yet done it like this before yet.
We just did for
that wasn't zoned into the city previously though.
Correct.
They came in as and
it's the same.
It was private. It was a private.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one additional step though.
This would be the first time where we've actually changed our zoning to allow it in
the county one. We did the county solar farm the same way as this one.
Yeah.
So I guess you're worried that more subdivisions are going to convert to solar farms.
Especially if you have the economy tanks.
And I'm saying every property in the city is at risk of becoming a solar farm just because of the way the state incentives are aligned, the availability and cost of property, whether you have willing landowners, etc.
And that's up to us to decide if that's
absolutely
what we want. It's our call.
Yep.
Right.
This is not something that is automatically granted because it's a special use.
Yeah.
It has to go.
Okay.
Because one, my next question, which is a big one for me, is road contributions for the perimeter road. Are they contributing
That's
their
a county
cap?
Road.
Oh, so the, so is there anything, will the county be requiring anything for that? You said you had a conversation with Fran?
I had a brief conversation with Fran. He said you have to do a road opening permit, and
okay.
That's about as far as we got. So,
okay.
Well, maybe he'll be available tomorrow and I can go spend some time with him.
And Cannonball is already approved. Where teacher was not improved. Yeah, was it improved to the standard?
You're there. Yes.
Yeah.
Even though improved, I see your differences there. Yes.
Yeah, Beecher was pretty rough when I was on it a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
I almost wish we had some way of getting revenue off of this a little bit. You know, I'm talking about not particularly this one, but as we deal with these coming forward. Like, you know, I don't know what to, you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, and I can't imagine the tax, once it's assessed, is going to be much higher than agricultural.
I mean, it's multiples of agricultural, which is like $1,000 for each one of these farmlands. So
is compared to $100, it's
yeah. It's several multiples higher. I think I calculated about $26,000 per site going into the school district.
We get a couple thousand dollars.
Not a whole lot for the city, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely do not have the authority to generate revenue from these properties. It's not a home rule municipality. As a home rule municipality, I have not heard of anybody trying to generate any taxes or revenue off solar farms. So I haven't studied the law that would give us the authority to do that. But I'm going to guess it's no, or it's prohibited already by the state, just given the incentives that the state has put up basically to see these develop, across the entire state.
Do we just obviously get stuff off the towers?
Yeah, absolutely. So we charge lease payments, but in this case, instead of siding on a tower,
I'm
siding on a farm field, which the farmer is then getting.
I was just thinking that revenue. I knew that it revenue off a tower. So
now, if we own that land.
Several hundred acres of farm fields.
Right. Nay.
All right. Anything else, Chris? What you think of?
It's just I noticed in the maintenance specifications you guys call out Roundup as the primary herbicide you use on the sites for these.
I'm not terribly familiar with the different chemicals. They have used repeatedly the word herbicide for treatment, whether it's Roundup or some other different chemical. I don't exactly know. I know that the church was pretty adamant about not having it sprayed anywhere near their well, and I said, okay, we'll make sure that doesn't happen. And that was supposed to have been written into the maintenance plan. I don't recall off the top of my head if it was, but we did have a brief conversation about it yesterday. She did say, I was told, herbicide and manually pulling weeds, which sounds like a lot of labor to me. But
if somebody wants to do that versus using Roundup, that works for me.
Well, I mean, obviously, and that goes back to your point about the time it takes for the native plants to take root. Sometimes you have to pull the weeds out to allow those native plants to take over.
Okay. Anything else? Rusty, any thoughts? Okay. I guess it goes to PZC.
PZC public hearing next week for rezone special use and variance, and then it comes the May 30th for annexation agreement, and then it's coming to June for final for city council.
Anything else? Okay, I think that was the last two items, so is there any additional business? Is none? Any additional business? Okay, meeting adjourned.